Welcome to Books, Stories, People with me, Nancy Richards. To be fair, Shakespeare is not an easy read. Ask generations of school kids who stumbled on him in the curriculum. When she was at school, Buchlet Ngaba thought Shakespeare was a fancy way of speaking that only rich white people could access. Well, the award-winning South African actor, writer and speaker has subsequently changed her mind. In 2016, Buchlet won a Brett Goldin bursary to attend the Royal Shakespeare Company in Stratford in the UK. She came back to found Shakespeare Grounded, an initiative giving access to the words of the Bard to learners of all levels. Amongst other things, she's artist in residence at the Tsikinya Chaka Centre for Shakespeare, Transnationalism and Multilingualism, and she's one of four writers on the How Now Brown Cow Writers Collective programme working on developing a script. But more recently, Buchlet took part in a groundbreaking, experimental online reading production of Neil Coppin's adaptation of Hamlet, both as an actor playing Ophelia and as associate director. So she's had a long journey with Shakespeare, and I asked her how it began.
Any, I would say, South African pupil and possibly pupils internationally or globally, all of us are introduced to Shakespeare. Well, actually, if we are at a very privileged school, let's say, we are introduced to Shakespeare within our English syllabus by the time we're about 14, 15. I would say that's when we start to look at specifically Romeo and Juliet. And I would say that my first encounter with Shakespeare, he's always sort of existed in the background of my dream. What I mean by that is I've always wanted to be a storyteller and I've always wanted to be an actor very badly since I was very, very young. And I've always had a great connection to reading, writing, and also performing. And so obviously, if you're interested in that as a kid, do you know what I mean? For some reason, I suppose this is the great question. How is it that a young black girl originally from Empangeni / the Northwest in South Africa somehow was always aware of Shakespeare? And then found herself at a school where by the time she was 14 went, oh, this is the Romeo and Juliet. Because it's funny, I'm pretty sure that if I asked any kid, they would say, yeah, I do know Romeo and Juliet. Those tropes have existed for us for so long. But anyway, I was actually speaking to someone the other day and I was saying, thank God for Baz Luhrmann's Romeo and Juliet also, because I think that it's done a lot. And it speaks to what pop culture can do in speaking back to classic work or traditional work and what it can do to really keep the work alive. Because if nothing else, I had an inkling of a memory of being very young and on ETV seeing Claire Danes on the balcony with those wings. And I remember definitely seeing Mercutio, this incredible character. And as I said, just the combination of it all, the not being allowed to watch it because I was very young at that point, let's say maybe 7 years old, six, seven. It was on SABC 3. But I saw this very beautiful young actor doing this thing. And as I said, I wanted to tell stories. So immediately I loved it. I didn't know why I loved it, but there was something so inherently theatrical about it. And I suppose we can touch on that also when we speak about Hamlet, the online reading, because I think that that's what we touch on also. Anyway, I digress. By the time I was 13 years old, as I said, I had all of these tiny little clues, but they still weren't quite enough. And what I managed to do was, again, because I was at a school that allowed and afforded me this opportunity, you know, and I know a lot of kids do this where you don't actually understand the story. You just learn the exam questions and the syllabus and you know what it is that you're supposed to write. That means that you don't ever essentially have to place yourself within the story. You can just write, regurgitate a clever thing that someone else said, and then you will get 85%, let's say, for your English exam, which then means that you actually stand a greater chance at getting a scholarship to go to some higher learning institution within the country. Yet some other kid who did not get that opportunity doesn't get to do that. And for me, that's where Shakespeare Grounded, I think, that works specifically with students. That's the gap that I'm looking to answer. So I said a lot within that one question. But for me, Nancy, it's always been a case of the perspective of me as a student, and then me as an actor, then me as someone who was given the opportunity to learn, iambic, to learn how to deal with this form. And then later, only much later, did I discover the salt lake in my grandmother's garage.
Ah, okay. We want to stop you right there, because I was going to say, let's talk about Shakespeare Grounded, but I would like to talk about your grandmother and Sol Plaikie. I'm sure they would be very good friends somewhere along the line. But your grandmother gave you a copy of Shakespeare. Just explain the grandmother Sol Plaikie story.
Well, the funny thing is she actually didn't even give it to me. I just discovered it. But that discovery of...
What was it you discovered?
I discovered a few things, actually, but again, about memory. Actually, no, let me answer your question first. It's so funny. It's a chicken and an egg sort of situation. All of it, it feels like it's unfolded in a very meant-to-be sort of way. After my grandmother passed away in her garage, you know, I found a copy of Sol Plaikie's Julius Caesar, which is Julius Caesar, translated into Setswana by Sol Plaikie pre-Bantu education. And I also found the complete works of Shakespeare, and that had been my grandfather's. And the Julius Caesar belonged to my grandmother, but I found it really interesting because in there also there was a little London Mission School post stamp. And it's funny that you mentioned Sol Plaikie and my grandmother and all of that, or my grandmother's rather, and my family, because I've also discovered later, you know, Sol Plaikie obviously came from Kimberley. I've started to make all of these insane connections to Charlotte Maxeke, Sol Plaikie also as Black African intellectuals of a time, why they decided to investigate and to look at all of these works, and also what that means as a cultural inheritance and legacy. And I think that's what our conversation is about, right? And what we're getting at is that I thought that it wasn't mine. I thought for a long time, you know, entering it through an education system, I thought that it had nothing to do with me. It was much later, through my interest, actually, or not my interest, my passion, my career, and my love for art, that I discovered that I actually have a legacy in this in Africa. And when you start to consider things like Charlotte Maxeke and Sol Plaikie, I'm an artist in resident, or rather, I have a fellowship at the UWCCHR Humanities Research Center, and I'm also writing a play on Maxeke. So that's how all of these worlds kind of come in together. And the discovery that Sol Plaikie's interest in Shakespeare came about because he watched Hamlet in Kimberley in 1892 blows my mind, you know. But again, all of this came with my discovery of it in Setswana, and then my question of why was he this interested? And so then I started to be a little bit more interested, or at least engaged, and to go, sure, he must have really, there must be a reason to bother. Because quite frankly, before then, I'd very much dismissed it as a very white thing. I was just like, only white, surely only white people can understand this.
It feels to me like you were, as Shakespeare might say, you were starred, or you were marked to sort of pick up his legacy, as it were, pick up his baton, because you then won yourself a scholarship to Stratford-on-Avon, to the Royal Shakespeare Company over there, which must have been like the gates of heaven opening for you. Or was it? When you got there, how was that to be in the sort of hallowed ground, hallowed boards of the Royal Shakespeare Company?
You know, I never thought that I was going to another huge dream accomplished that to me feels ever continuing. And what I mean by that is I can't wait to go back for a season. I can't wait to get back on the boards and to get to settle on them, because I actually went to Stratford for the first time when I was on an exchange program at the University of Leeds. And a friend of mine and I, we ended up in London, and then we decided to go and watch a play in Stratford. And as it turns out, I think it was later I found out the now artistic director, Greg Dorman's first play that he was presenting, and it was Cardenio. And I remember seeing Black people in it, you know, and at that stage, even fewer than what I would see later, but being like, oh, okay. But also I found myself really engaged and excited, and to be looking down and to be watching, and I couldn't believe the culture. I think that's what it was. The great excitement around storytelling. And maybe it was something that I recognized was possible in South Africa, because it is firstly because that's what we do at home, but also, I suppose, in a more formatted scenario in comparison, we could say Makanda also wants to be the sort of town that can do that. And I really believe that. And with my work with Ubom Theatre Company, Eastern Cape Drama Company, with Janet and Andrew Batland, and traveling nationally and specifically working in the Eastern Cape also, I really saw that. And that's also part of the work, right? Raising the community to be able to do that. Anyway, so the first time I went to Stratford was then, and I was passing through, and I really didn't think that I was going to be given an opportunity to go back, but I got a glimpse that I might like to.
Yes, I bet you really would like to. What did you do when you were there? Because I think it was an aha moment, and I think it was where the germ of Shakespeare Grounded actually began. What were you doing there, and how did you translate the parts that you were given?
Oh, when I was in Stratford?
Yes.
So I won the, as you mentioned, I was awarded the Brett Golden Bursary. And again, another funny story, though, because I had tried for it. How it worked was every 2 years, the bursary would come about, the auditions would come about, because the idea was they tried to send 2 young South African actors to go there so that one wouldn't be lonely. And I was in the very last year. And I got to go with David Viviers, a really incredible actor. And again, meant to be's are very, very important, because I had previously tried to get the bursary, did not get it, was incredibly devastated about this, and then was encouraged to go back and try again by Susan Danford and John Gunny, who were playing my parents in Missing. And again, so you to have older actors, you know, and mentors, especially of that caliber, who go, no, but the work doesn't stop there. And something really interesting happened in that 1.5 year gap between those auditions, you know, and that was that I had been given a glimpse into working physically now with Juliet. And I finally, working with Susan and her opening up Iambic to me as an actor, and how to work that, I finally saw myself as Juliet, which had never happened before. I'd spent so much time seeing Juliet at the most within my world as Claire Danes, a white girl, never me. So suddenly when that happened, I was like, oh, wow, I get it. It was so crazy. And Susan having done that for me, of course I want to do that for other young actors. But another thing that happened was Susan said to me, no, you can do that Juliet monologue again, because that is the nature of what Shakespeare is. And that's something that I've learned, is that that's what's special, is that you keep coming back and you keep learning and you keep unpacking more. So I really wanted it the first time, but I was ready for it the second time. And at that stage, I'd written The Girl Without a Sound, my first book. I think I'd really started to develop my own voice. And I think that that's what I really, really needed to feel comfortable there. That, along with the fact that David and I didn't really know each other previously, but we got along really, really well, was a huge help, because it felt like we were discovering everything together. But at the same time, I was very aware of my place and who I was and where I was. But again, because I started to develop my own voice, I didn't have to doubt myself so much.
I think that it was when you were over there that you had the moment of, how am I going to bring this back home? And you made a pledge to yourself to bring the awareness back home, which was the foundation of Shakespeare Grounded. What is Shakespeare Grounded? What was the concept?
Actually, how it came about was, as you said, a pledge to myself, but also to the people who I had accepted the bursary from, including Brett Golden's mother, Denise Golden. And I was, as I said, it was the 10th and final year for the anniversary. I understood that Dame Janet Suzman, John Gunn, Janice Honeyman, the RAC, so many people had been so like present in keeping this bursary alive. And it's something that I really want to look at some point, bringing back in some way within my own capacity. But, you know, one of the questions that we got at the audition was, okay, but then what are you going to do with it? And I said that I would come back home and I would teach. And I would teach what I had learned. And, you know, I think, I don't know who I was speaking to. I think I was doing an interview the other day, and it occurred to me that I have been doing that for the last 4 or 5 years. And I am so damn proud of myself. It was so important for me to do that, because I understood the gravity of the opportunity that I was getting. as a young Black girl from this particular continent to end up there. I didn't want to take it lightly. I knew what it was for me, for it to be me. I meant it when I said I was going to teach that. And to be able to look back on that and to go, it's been 5 years and I have taught that, it's been amazing. And just to answer the second part of your question, which, and that decision in and of itself, even before going into the audition, if you know that this is what you're going to do, it informs how you perform, it informs how you audition, it informs it all. And also because at that stage, to be very honest with you, I was performing for the love of it now, because I had fallen in love with Antigone and Juliet, and I understood that I was them. It wasn't so distant anymore. And the funny thing is, a white woman who plays my mother, who my own mother loved so much, is the person who opened up that door for me and pushed me through it. And I see all of these gifts. And John Gunny had said to me, you know, you always send the elevator back down. And it's all of these things that I take very seriously. And because of that, it informed what Shakespeare Grounded was. Because as soon as I got there, I started to note how I was absorbing it. By that, I mean the knowledge, what I was learning, also identifying what I felt were the greatest obstacles between us as the body who is telling the story and the text, what we think the obstacles are. And also because, quite frankly, it is tough. It's not easy. You've got to learn how to do it. But my point with Shakespeare Grounded is, if we're given the tools, all of us can. And the very first tool of Shakespeare Grounded is narrative and story. Just understand the story. As soon as you do that, you begin to get it. And so that's what I mean about Juliet. You know, I began to understand, oh, I've definitely been a young girl who has been beyond in love. Like, and also because with my work with Susan, you know, working on the text and fleshing it out and really cutting it up, I understood that, sure, it should actually be called Juliet and Romeo. I understood. I was like, all of this action takes place because of her. And to suddenly have that agency, as I said, then it becomes a case of, I'm not trying to put on Juliet, I'm not trying to put on something white, I'm just telling a story. And with all of my students, that's also the first thing that we work with. We start with narrative, because I think if we start with that, everything else naturally has to happen. As soon as you understand the story, I give you the opportunity then you're allowed to hate it or not hate it, but only after you understand.
But let's move on to Hamlet. So let's take the story of Hamlet, and whichever way you look at it, it's ever so slightly complicated, because people are doing all sorts of things for all sorts of reasons, and there are ghosts and demons and, you know, or at least mental demons. So let's talk about the particular Neil Coppens adaptation of Hamlet. And I mean, you talk about Sol Plaike's translation of Julius Caesar. Now we're looking at Neil Coppens' translation, if you like, or adaptation or interpretation of Hamlet. Can you explain, here's a challenge for you, can you explain in a nutshell what Hamlet's all about? And then can you explain how Neil envisaged it to be a very South African production?
You know, I will try, but I wouldn't presume too much with any of them, to be honest, because it's felt like this process, it's so, apologies listeners, I'm struggling with the words just because it's emotive work, that's what it is, and it's very difficult to describe how and what it is that each person, the weight of what each person brought to this particular production, starting with Neil's adaptation, yes, wanting it, and him going, I want to do it. And then him pushing to do it. And then him pushing to get the cast that he wanted for it, which in itself was a real thing. And I would know this also, not just as an actor, but also through my work with the South African Shakespeare Board, you know. I started hashtag lockdown Shakespeare, where I invited the public and actors across the board, you know, to 1 minute long traditional text, we'll give you R1,000. Because at the time, we needed it, you know, we all knew the lockdown was that serious. R1,000 means a lot to us, especially just to get artists thinking again. But my point is, we found 10,000 Hamlets then. We found 10,000 potential Ophelias, 10,000 potential Claudiuses, Brutuses, Juliuses, you know, there are so many, is what I'm saying. There's just not enough opportunity. So even Neil would say himself, even, it was really crazy. After having done that audition process, then he selects everyone, as I said, which in itself is a whole reimagining and to push for it. But then after that, for that to be cancelled and then to still see the work that I was doing on this side and all of the people across the country who were submitting stuff, it's really insane, but also magical.
I'm just going to interrupt you, Buckley, because you talk about it being cancelled. I think we need to be clear that it was going to be on at the Few Guard. It was going to be on the boards at the Few Guard. And that was cancelled because of lockdown and things fell apart. So somehow the production had to be held in a container until such time as you could find another way of doing it, which was eventually online. But go back to the process, because the rethinking, the reimagining Hamlet happened twice. You know, first it had to be the adaptation, then it had to be the online adaptation. Yes. So let's start with the first bit, the adaptation. So you went through this process to try and get all the right players.
And to have a cast of majority of people of colour, you know, in and of itself, here in Cape Town, in the country, really insane to think that we haven't seen it on the scale, because I'm very wary of saying it hasn't been done before, because it has. That's what I've been humbled to find each time. And that's what I keep going back to, is that Maklaki touched this, Blakey touched this, people touched this long before me. I just happen to have a platform that they didn't, maybe, you know. But anyway, yes, so, you know, Neil had really fought to have this particular cast in this way. It got cancelled. And then basically everyone in the cast, I think that that's what was so also really incredible, was that everyone, when we found the opportunity to do an online reading, everyone was very excited to come back. And I was incredibly, I was excited as associate director, because in its first imagining, Neil had wanted me on stage and as associate director, so that I could do a lot of the adaptation work with him, but also the actual translation work with him. Because I speak Setswana, I speak a little bit of Xhosa and isiZulu, but I understand all of them. I understand a little bit of Pedi. So all of that I find is super, super, of course it's helpful. Also because I've established relationships with, you know, whether it be Professor Sabata Mpomokai in Kimberley, who himself is my greatest inspiration also, and has opened up a whole world for me for what existed and what exists and the potential for what can be. And here's a fun story, Nancy, just while we're here. He was telling me actually when we were translating, because we're looking at Hamlet in Setswana also, naturally, because of Blakey. And, you know, we were talking about metaphors. And this would answer, I suppose, how I translate and what it means to translate from English into Setswana. Is Sabata and I often would have a conversation about, okay, there is the bard's writing of it, right? Then there's Saul Blakey's interpretation. And then we've seen Saul Blakey's interpretation of this. And now there is us. And then he goes, and in that, it's been crazy because we understand that there's Prof. Sabata's adaptation of it and there's mine. And then we go, so what are we looking to do with this translation? Are we looking to lift language, as in to lift the Setswana language as a whole? Are we looking to make it accessible? And in that conversation, we spoke about Khosetsile, the incredible poet. And he described to me how once in a workshop with him, you know, he said an expression in Setswana, Matlatsipi. And that means eyes of steel. And if there was never a Shakespearean expression right there, I don't know what else could be. And that's how we translate. And that's how language stays rich. And Susan Danford helped me with that also in her early teachings with me, because she taught me to always go for the image. Go for the image. And if you go for the image also in the language, it's magic. What's even more magical in this reading of Hamlet is that then we also worked with making it scan. So we tried to put even the colloquial, like bits and bobs of what Hamlet and Horatio would say to each other, for example, we would try to place that into iambic also, if we could. Which, of course, when you're doing it with Malome David Dennis, is insane, because he knows Claudius. he can rattle it like this. He knows the verse. But to be given the opportunity for me to give it to him in Isa Xhosa and to see the vulnerability and what came out of that and to see his excitement about re-entering the text was wild. Which takes me back to, that's also what Shakespeare Grounded is about. Yeah. If you can enter the story and you understand what the narrative is, you can place yourself within it, but it or not, or choose not to, which is your prerogative too.
I just have to draw attention to the fact that just as you have picked up the bard's baton, Sebastian Po Mokai has picked up Sol Plaikie's baton. He has become Sol Plaikie sort of reincarnate, has he not? So it's interesting that you guys are sort of living on. But coming back to the adaptation itself, so there are different languages in it. There are different allusions to things that are quite South African. It's got a very now feel about it. I think somewhere it refers to it as being...
I didn't answer your question. I'm so sorry to catch you.
Here's your opportunity to try again.
So in as I said, but I just had to give the context of, as I said, the heart of it all, because I don't want to just give a simple answer because it's not simple, because there's so much lifeblood in it. And now that I've said all of that, I feel far more comfortable saying, so Neil's adaptation, I would say, very generally, was so incredible because he saw it, as you said, in South Africa, but he saw it within a Zulu royal household as a result of what we were seeing at the time in 2019, which is so funny because of what we are seeing now also. But we can speak about many monarchs. And I love that. And I think that that's so interesting. And then my second, so that's the answer about Neil's adaptation. So he placed it there, which means that he saw it at home, which is incredible. Then the next job is, then you give it to the cast. You go, okay, so this is how we see it. And to me, this is also where Shakespeare Grounded comes in also, because I'm not looking to just tell you this is what it is. I'm looking for your response. And the response that I'm actually looking for is you as this character within your own home, which I'm telling you is this home of Africa. So at some point, the question was asked, must we take away Denmark? And of course not. We're not looking away to take away that specificity because it's we don't need to. Call it Denmark, call it Joburg, call it whatever you may. The people that you're seeing on the screen and the story that you're seeing is undoubtedly South African. Then to your next question, when you asked me, how is it South African? It's so funny. I found so many, or what is Hamlet about? Rather, and I got so many responses from different audience members, and I think one of the ones that really struck me, which was very intense, but I loved it considering that in the reading I am Ophelia and Fanny Soa is Gertrude, and one of the things that we spoke about was very much the woman within the royal households. What does that mean? And you know, Fanny Soa and I spoke about how this is a very masculine play, obviously. So it's telling you about the royal house, but I said to Neil, but it's actually telling you about the royal house very much from a male perspective and what's happening. But what's funny is you never actually know what's happening with the queens and the princesses and the ones who are actually carrying the house. And that's what the tragedy is. That's what the tragedy is. And then somebody responded to me and said, sure, this Hamlet was so scary to watch because it's so South African. And I said, in which way? And they said, because all of the men just go around killing women here. Or killing their spirit. And I went, yeah.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, that is my job. And that's exactly how I felt about this Ophelia.
Yeah.
I've never particularly been interested again in Ophelia until I imagined her at home. There are so many of us.
So you mentioned that somebody said it was really quite scary to watch this production. It was quite scary to watch this production. And one of the reasons it's quite scary is because your faces, unlike when you sit in an audience and watch the players on the stage, your faces were right up close with every nuanced expression. And although you were side by side, you were having a conversation, it must have required a whole different style of acting. At some point there were four of you on the screen all interacting. Yes. Sometimes there was one of you, sometimes two, but the facial expressions with your black surroundings so that your faces yes. shone out, it was extraordinary. How was it as an actor to be performing in that way without the physical warmth of another body next to you?
It was very, very interesting And we came up with an incredible term for it. We call it Zacting, Zoom acting. And Neil, Bianchi, and I would laugh a lot about that. And Annalisa and Tony, who played Horatio and Hamlet, irrespectively. But in once we get to the boards, they will swap between the roles, which is very exciting for me to also consider as an Ophelia also. But it was incredibly interesting, but so beautiful, because Shakespeare is inherently, to me, intimate. The fact that everyone thinks, rah, 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 I find that interesting, because it's not. It's primary emotions. That's what it's about. And the actors actually could be saying it right here to you, even if they were on stage. That's actually what it would be, because their thoughts are that personal. Why would a soliloquy, and in Neil's version, with Hamlet in the toilet and Ophelia rapping on the door after the wedding party, hoping he might come and talk to her, you know?
Another feature of the online reading was that there was a narrator sort of describing the scene and painting the picture, to which you would all respond one way or another.
Exactly. That was a huge one for me. I just thought, Neil, you cannot cut it. Because, sorry, you asked me earlier about what Neil's adaptation was, what it is, and I gave a very broad answer. But I would say the magic in all of that and the answer is in all of the narration, because what Neil did there was absolute magic. And to have Bianca reading it was ridiculous. I think that's part of the reason why we also felt like we were on Broadway. We were watching. It was also clear. And the opportunity as an actor to really listen and just respond to action was so beautiful. And for me, a really great exercise for film also. For film and for the theater, because you just have to tell the truth, but listen to where you are and then be there. And that's what Shakespeare requires, that sort of immediacy. And for all of us, you know, this was an opportunity to really do the groundwork to create something really magical. Because as I said, that's what this kind of work requires. And that's what I always hoped for.
Two questions. You talk about the groundwork, and I'm thinking maybe this is the groundwork for the future, because this is a way of bringing Shakespeare right onto everybody's little screen, even onto their phone. But prior to that, though, because it was a reading, did you do it all in one take? Or were there sort of,
We did.
One hit. Wow.
One hit. And that was also really important to us. And I'm so proud of us for that. You know, we just felt very strongly that we've said this is a live reading. It's got to be a live reading. It can't be a recording. It's just not right. It just wouldn't be.
Yeah,
and that was really, really wonderful. And it was so insane to still feel so nervous and anxious in my own tiny little study, and to see everyone else, wherever they are in their parts of the world, also equally anxious. It was wonderful.
And not to lose it, I'm surprised that nobody sort of collapsed in a heap and said, I can't do this anymore, because
I got load shedding, Nancy. Load shedding. So the reason that it went all black and dark on Ophelia and spooky, yes, partly intentional, but also my power died. And so the candles were out, everything was ready. I had my modem. And it was something that we had also discussed, that if we did have problems, we would pause and we would put up a slide and say back in however many minutes. But when my load shedding went, I just thought to myself, I will not pause before she gets to come out and have her last say. Because what I noted about Ophelia and what I loved about her in this reading in particular, and what she felt to me, was she's just a normal young girl, man. And she is the daughter of a servant, actually. And that is hard in that way.
And I'm just thinking that to have load shedding makes it the ultimate, the quintessential South African production. So
very much so.
But the other thing that you were doing was you were creating something altogether new, both in the content of the production, in the reading of the production, but also in putting it online as you did. And I couldn't help thinking that, strange as it was to be sitting there in my front room watching you all on my screen performing this unbelievable production, that it was very much the way of the future. And it must sort of tie in with Shakespeare Grounded, with the kids that you're working with, who would relate to seeing something on their screen. Do you see this as the way forward?
You know, I don't want to say that it is the way forever, because I love the stage.
Yes.
I love being at it. It's everything to me. But I now understand also that what I mean by that is I love to tell a story and I love an audience. And I will find a way to do it no matter what, is what I know to be true. And I think that that is the artist's job during the times. And so that's what we're doing. And it's funny that you mentioned my students, because 100%, it's crazy. As an associate director, I feel like my work with my students is exactly what helped me so much in trusting this form, because we had done this last year. My Midsummer Night's Dream students, who actually the course is coordinated, funnily enough, by Malume David Dennis, they won the industry award for their online Midsummer Night's Dream, which I directed last year. And so it's these beautiful things that you see happen. And I go, some of my best work happens with my students. And that's why I have a great respect for them. And that's why I love being an actor. I love being a writer. And I love being a teacher and a speaker. I don't see them as separate at all. To me, it's incredibly important that they are all married.
I'm sure Shakespeare would be very proud that you wear so many hats so very effectively. Well, just lastly, we mentioned your play that you're writing about Charlotte Makeke. Is it? Can we look forward to that very soon?
You can definitely look forward to it. Hopefully not too soon, Nancy, only because there are so many deadlines at the moment that the writer doesn't want to promise too much. But I can say that by next year, definitely, it will be there. I'm also in the process of writing another production of my own. Next year also, I will be, fingers crossed, touring with my one-woman show, Swan Song, which I actually started writing at the RAC. So these are all very good things. Thank you, everyone, for listening and being so great. And
well, thank you. And I definitely, with all the things that you have lined up for the future, we will definitely be talking again. But in the meantime, bless you. Congratulations. You made the most wonderful, sometimes giggly, sometimes scary, the most extraordinary Ophelia. So well done. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'm sure we will speak again, and I look forward to it. Thank you.